Good morning, members. I think we can start. We do have a quorum in the meeting. The agenda is on the screen for this meeting. It's the meeting of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services today. The agenda is as follows. Opening and welcome by the chairperson. Then we'll deal with apologies. Then we will have a briefing by the Department of Social Development on the annual performance plan and the budget for 22-23. We will have discussions and responses. And on the agenda, we still have adoption of the committee second term program and any other business. Members, I want to ask your permission that we are having a joint sitting this afternoon, and that we leave the administrative part for the committee of the adoption of the committee second term program and the other business, that we take it out of the agenda for our meeting of next week. We will also then, I will need to get a mover and the seconder for the agenda with the adjustments. Can I just, before we start the meeting officially, can we get a mover and a seconder for the agenda with the adjustment of taking out the last part of the meeting?
Chairperson, it's Ndongeni moves for the agenda.
Thank you, Member Ndongeni. Can we have a seconder, please?
Member Letuli.
Thank you, Member Letuli. So, members, the agenda with amendments is being approved. Let me start, first of all, I ask for a minute of silence for the victims of the disaster that hit our shores in KZN and in the Eastern Cape, that we, on behalf of this committee, convey our condolences to the families who have lost their loved ones during this disaster. And can we just have a minute of silence, please? Thank you, members. Let me take the opportunity to welcome the members of the Select Committee and also the members of the department to this meeting. Let me also take the opportunity to thank the DSD department, the minister and the deputy minister for the swift response when the disaster hit us in KZN. We know that you have gone the extra mile in assisting our communities in KZN as well as in the Eastern Cape, as well as in Ulanga in the Western Cape. On behalf of the members of this committee, let us really thank you for doing such a splendid job and wishing you well in all the jobs that you still need to do in this disaster. Thank you. As we have approved the agenda, I will now go to the apologies. Marcel, can you give us the apologies? if Marcel is not there, because I know she also has a doctor's appointment this morning. Olutando, are you in the
morning? Meeting? Sorry, morning, Chairperson, morning, members, and colleagues from the department, including the minister. Chairperson, I have given the department's rights to share the screen. I've actually given to quite a few of them. I have just been in contact with one of the colleagues on the other side. I think they'll connect in a minute, Chair.
Thank you very much, Marcel. And is the minister in the meeting? Let me then welcome the minister, who's always making time to join us. I know we've got an apology from the DM, who is busy.
The network is very bad.
Thank you, my dear. Minister, welcome. Thank you for making time to come to this meeting. I know you are awfully busy. We received an apology from the DM, who is also busy in KZN. And let me ask if there is any other apology then from the... Let me ask if there's any apology then from any of the members.
Chairperson, I haven't received any apologies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Marcel. With no further ado, I will then hand over to the Minister, Minister Zulu, to take us through with her department. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I wish to just upfront indicate that we have a bit of a network problem, so I keep getting cut. Even yesterday I struggled throughout all the meetings I had because the network is not so good. But however, while I am here, Honorable Chair, I wish to greet you and all the members of the Select Committee, and also the CEO of SASSA, Dr. Memela Kambula, and then the Acting Chief Executive Officer of the National Development Agency, Mr. Bongani Magongo, and senior managers and officials of the department and both entities. I'm hoping that the apology of the DG has been already given, because I was trying to connect and was delayed. So I'm not sure if the apologies have been made already, but I also guess who Brenda will make apology. A very good morning to you all. Before going into the substance of today's presentation, please allow me to express our message of support, consolations and condolences to the people who are affected by the heavy downpours and floods in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape provinces in the recent weeks. It is for that reason that our fellow country people lost it is for the reasons that our fellow country people's lives, livelihoods and belongings to these floods that President Cyril Ramaphosa declared them a national disaster. May I also indicate, Chairperson, that we are aware of the Western Cape, Cape Town in particular, where there's also been fires that devastated people's homes. We also add them to this and commit to doing the best that we can to assist where possible. While poverty, inequalities and unemployment are constants in the lives of majority of people in different communities, the series of shocks and disasters have been knocking us along the path. From COVID-19 to the July unrest 2021 and now the floods, must impress lasting lessons on how the state responds to the people's calls for visibility, responsiveness, and relevance. In as much as these shocks have had regressive impacts on our service implementation gains, their silver lining lies in the lessons that our institutions ought to take from them for the purpose of becoming capable, resilient, and innovative in the future. We also call for the deepening of people-centered society-wide collaboration that will alleviate the immediate plight of the affected families and communities while securing their mid to long-term sustainability. And Chairperson, I do want to say that the department has also been requested to really step up in its support, but also to step up in terms of coordinating humanitarian disaster assistance so that when all is said and done, firstly, the collection of whatever needs to be collected from those want to be supportive, it is properly coordinated and is also sent to the right people at the right time, and also it's monitored and ensured that there is no duplication, also to ensure that the whatever is being given to our people, it reaches the people who need it most. Chairperson and members, thank you for inviting the department and its entities, the SASA and NDA, to appear before the committee to present their 2023 annual performance plans against the 2022 to 2025 strategic plans. It is with the object of improving the state of the people that the Department of Social Development is mandated to lead the coordination of social protection imperatives that are outlined in the NDA. In other words, the work of the department and its entities, it is to be the improvement of human level outcomes in our communities, as well as their society-wide impact. Put in another way, it is when the programs of the department and its entities have embedded the state of the people in their conceptualization, resourcing, and implementation, these APPs will start to demonstrate how the people's vulnerabilities and development are verifiably going to be addressed. Moreover, their programs ought to be the embodiment of the people's dignity as much as they should engender the people's collective prosperity. And myself and the Deputy Minister will work very hard to make sure that our role in terms of directing the departments is really even strengthened at all times. Honorable Chairperson and members, the presentation of these APPs marks the midpoint of administration of our democratic government and our parliament. The Deputy Minister and I made it clear to the department and entities that from this point onwards, our expectations of their performance is going to be applied with more rigor than it has been in the case in the past few years. Therefore, we demand of them to demonstrate how their programs are positively going to impact the prospects of the well-being of each other the remaining period of this term. We are not going to stop at APPs. We are demanding that operational plans should translate these APPs into people's lived realities in families and in different communities throughout the country. In other words, in your constituencies. And it is going to be yourselves as members also that will make sure that you do the oversight work and let us know when you are not finding what we have said we are going to be doing. We insisted that these APPs must factor in the inputs and aligned with the State of the Nation address, the performance agreement that I signed with the President, the Economic Recovery, Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, and the Budgetary Review and Recommendation Reports, among others. We further insisted that the department and its entities should learn from across government and innovate programs implementation through the cabinet adopted district development model. It's no question that the district development plan is the people-centered service implementation approach that instills community responsiveness in our institutions while it encourages active citizenship. We shouldn't forget that ours is a participatory democracy. The growing and intentional implementation of the department's SASA and NDA's program in the collaboration with provincial department, as well as the 52 district and metropolitan municipalities, is most desirable to us bringing these APPs to the people, that is, to the communities. We urge the district champion in the 52 district and metropolitan municipalities to utilize their one plan to attract social development investments to their responsive jurisdictions. Intentionally, collaboratively, and informed by human level outcomes and impact, each sphere of government and social partners must meaningfully invest themselves towards the development of our communities. In so doing, the APPs that will be presented today ought to resonate with and meaningfully respond to our people's felt needs. Likewise, pursuant of the need to improve our people's experiences, we welcome the reinforcement of this committee's oversight role towards ensuring that APPs are indeed implemented. This can only help to improve life in all our communities. Consequently, from this point onwards, these APPs should help to remove multiple vulnerabilities that our people in many parts of our country are necessarily and needlessly endure. Therefore, we are better off with this committee's intensified scrutiny of the implementation of these APPs. In the same vein, and as you always do, I'm certain that today the honorable members will strengthen the weak parts of these APPs, as was done by the portfolio committee as we presented to them. During the 2022-23 financial year, the department will continue to stimulate discussions around the resource modeling and implementation of the basic income grant. I'm smiling, Chairperson, about the basic income grant because I'm sure everybody yesterday heard about Elon Musk and what he has done. And I was excited because, never mind other things, that's what I'm talking about, is the fact that he is talking about the basic income grant. And I'm hoping that he should not lose sight of that, help us to make sure that it does across the world, but we want to start it here in South Africa. And resulting from growing job losses and the need for income support, there's an increase in the demand for SASSA services. Consequently, throughout 2022-23, SASSA will continue to pay social grants to people who are unable to support themselves and their dependents. This may result in the number of SASSA increasing to an estimated 18.9 million by March 2023. In the year ahead, SASSA will continue with the implementation of the monthly payments of the innovative responsive COVID-19 social relief of distress grant to an estimated population of 12 million beneficiaries who are aged 19 to 59. Similarly, the ordinary social relief of distress intervention will continue to be provided to individuals and families who are affected by shocks and disasters, as well as those who are awaiting their grant approvals. And I think SASSA will also take the opportunity today maybe to also explain the process in as far as the 350 social grant release of right now, because we can see that there's a lot of interest in it, and a lot of interest obviously is based on the fact that it has been impactful on the lives of our people. During the 2022-23 financial year, and again, the NDA will be strengthening its financial and strategic sustainability in the quest to counteract the decreasing fiscal account that was occasioned by COVID-19. This is intended at positioning the NDA and an unprecedented public development finance institution that coordinates people, public, private, civil, academic, multilateral partnership wherein, among others, civil society organizations may impactfully partake in the social and economic reconstruction and recovery of our people and their communities in a manner that equally emphasizes local relevance and macroeconomic contribution. During this financial year, the NDA will visibly contribute towards the realization of the proposals that are contained in Putting South Africa to Work, a document which I think members probably have seen or come across or read. Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, more details that are relevant to the presentation will follow. And members, please receive the department, SASSA and NDA's APPs for the 2022-23 financial year for your due consideration and engagement. I thank you, Chairperson, for giving me and the DM this opportunity, and I'd like to hand over to the department and hand over to Brenda to steer the ship. Thank you very much, and a very good morning to you all.
Thank you, Minister. Brenda, you can continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the members of the Select Committee. Good morning to our minister and to the DM. Thank you very much, Minister and DM, for leading us from the front. We are ready today to present the department's annual performance plan for the 2023 financial year. And we are happy to say that we are energized by the fact that last year we managed to achieve quite a lot in terms of what we had planned for 2021. And there are things that we did not manage to achieve that we look forward to addressing in this current financial year. But we are also, I guess, energized is one word, but also motivated, as Minister has been saying, by what has happened in KZN and in the other provinces, some of the natural disasters and the impact that they are having, particularly on the clients that are the primary clients, the primary people that the Department of Social Development serves. Of course, we serve the whole country, but we understand also that things like natural disasters have a much harsher, much deeper impact and negative impact on people who are poor. And so we in this year really want to do our best and sharpen our arrows to fight the battle against poverty, against deprivation, and also against some of the things that are happening now. So Chairperson, the approach that we are going to take, first before I go on, is to also to indicate that the reason I'm leading this delegation is that our acting director general is out of the country at the moment, so I'm stepping in for a short period to assist in that position. But I'll also be wearing the other hat as the DDG for Comprehensive Social Security. What we are doing today, the way we thought we should do the approach, is that we should start by, of course, our head of strategy will present the bulk of the presentation that has already been shared with the members around what we intend to do in this current financial year. And also the other colleagues, the rest of EDCO will present parts of the presentation. Also our acting CFO will present program 2, which is the one that deals with all the finances of the department. And then we will also allow Mr. Kumbula Ndaba, who is the head of corporate services, to also give a presentation on part of the annual target for program 1. We will also have Ms. Isabella Skawana, who is the acting DDG for welfare services, to also talk to some of the program 4 APPs. And then Mr. Nechipale will present on program 5. For which he is responsible. So we thought we should allow the select committee members to hear from all of us, the team, so that the people who say this is what we are going to do are the ones who will in fact be taking the responsibility to ensure that we do achieve the goals that we have set up in the APP. I think it's important, as Minister was saying, that we will not only be, what we are presenting here is the annual performance plan, but there are also operational plans that we are working on, which are about ensuring that we meet the APP targets that we have set here, but also additional things that will happen in terms of our operational plans to ensure that we do address the very serious challenges that the country is facing, particularly as we approach, we move closer and closer to the deadline of 2030, where the NDP needs to be achieved. And there's been a lot of coverage of the fact that we are not as close as we need to be in terms of achieving our NDP goals. So the department is really aiming to make sure that we do a check and we make sure that the way that we've set up the APP currently is really taking into account what's in the National Development Plan and what's in other government wide plans, so that we are in sync with the rest of government's direction in terms of implementing the mandate of the Department of Social Development. What I will do now, Chairperson, with your permission, is to allow Thabane, who is our head of strategy and MNE, to take us through the first part of the presentation. And then when he gets to the part that must be done by Mr. Kumbula Ndaba, I'll hand over to him. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we have been giving a screen sharing right, so I will beam the presentation now. Screen share. Tarani, you can begin to.
A very good morning, Chairperson, and all the honorable members, and also greetings to our minister, the deputy minister, and the rest of the colleagues. I think at the beginning, one needs to, in terms of creating the context of this APP. One, I think from beginning one needs to say Jefferson and members, the department complied together with our entities. We were able to table our APP even before the end of March as expected. Our APPs were all tabled to Parliament on the 9th of March 2022. And one of the challenges that many sites said, and especially probably since 2020 and the outbreak of Corona, the pandemic, it required us as government, especially some of us department, to rethink the sense which will reinvent and also make sure that you are responsive. So as such, it's quite important that we also adopt the plans that should be responsive to the needs of the people and be also making sure that we are agile, that we'll be able to provide all the necessary information, be it in the space of these unplanned and unwarranted incidents of the coronavirus. So in fact, there are a few things that should be to make sure that this APP becomes what it is now, that we're going to present and see the details. Number one, we make sure this APP in terms of its journey, the journey is anchored in all the government-wide planning frameworks, because there are there planning frameworks provided by the National Treasury and provided by the PPFP. But also, we as a sector, it means ourselves, is working with our producers and our parts, including the entities. We make sure that we embark in the journey where we said we want to reinvent ourselves as the sector, as well as this particular portfolio. The second big area, and the second thing that we did was to make sure that we adopt what is called a results-based approach, where in terms of the crafting of our targets, we need to make sure that they become responsive and also to an extent that they'll be able to make the change, which the portfolio committee members has been emphasizing on to say, rather than telling us in terms of what you did, but you must also go on and say, what has changed as a result of those particular interventions? So that has been what we've been able, and we have seen in terms of the information, in terms of our performance that we've been providing, you will see the change, that's including the improvement in terms of our performance as a result of having adopted the results-based approach. The third element was to say, for the first time, we have now what identifies us as a set, and we loosely call that a mantra. So we have adopted a mantra, which is about building cohesive, resilient families and communities by investing in people to reduce poverty, vulnerability, and create sustainable livelihood. So this is the mantra. So as this collective, as this portfolio, this is what we want to do. This is what identifies us. We want to build these cohesive, resilient families and communities by making sure that we invest in them so that we reduce the incidence of poverty and vulnerability and create these. So this is what then we have said we want to do. And part of the journey that we did, we made sure that we consult. So we hosted the Nimbuselelo and also had the roundtable discussion where we invited various aspects, many of the aspects of our work, including our provinces, the NGOs, the academy. And we also, this was followed then by Nimbuselelo, which was also hosted by our minister and the embassy, who gave them their directive in terms of this is the line of march, this is what you want to see. This then explained the journey that we undertook. But beyond that, we ensured that our APPs are aligned to all the respective authorities in terms of what is required by the AG, what is required by the other centers of government, including DPME and so forth. For as a result, in 2020 October, we then submitted our APP so that they are analyzed. The AGSA, and in January, we met where they gave us feedback and we engaged as a collective. And we had to demonstrate the extent to which we were able to address the issues that have raised in the analysis. But I'm excited to say, within our first draft in terms of the analysis, of the 40 departments that exist nationally, our APP in terms of the analysis was ranked as number 6, and which showed that it means we had applied our minds and really, really tried to do a good work in this regard. So we are happy, what I'm supposed to say, as I'll show in the next slide, that beyond subjecting these APP to these elements, when the president in February then delivered his State of the Nation address, we took time as a department, next slide, we took time as a department to then say, let's analyze this honor and look at this implication in terms of us against the plans that we've already, that we were trying to finalize. So if we look at the president's honor address of the 2022, it has direct implications for us as a DSDA and also as this portfolio. Number one, there's definitely a list of them. The president spoke about the finalization of a comprehensive social compact so that we are able to grow economic, create jobs and combat hunger. He spoke about the job creation through social economy, including ECD work and social work and community services. This skills also next slash with us. I won't go through detail to all of them. But lastly, what became a topical issue was the expansion of support for poor families and to show that no person in this country has to endure the pain and dignity of hunger. It is in that context that the president then extended the 350 grant, which is still going on now for another year, and that will end until the 2023. But the president was very clear as well to say, whilst we are doing this, we need them to consult and come up with creative ways which are much more long-term so that we are able to provide best options in terms of how you replace the grant and so forth. And the department already have quite the number of some of the activities, including the target, which is also within the minister's EAP on creating sustainable livelihoods and jobs, especially for the grant recipient. But there's quite a number of areas that the president spoke to, including us intensifying our response and the fight against GBV and make sure that we are able to implement the pillar 4 of the national strategic plan on the fight of GBV and F as the countries I adopted, but also some of the areas, of course, include the minister in MSF, and also said the president had launched the DDM, so we had to continue as well with that. The next slide then also says, minister spoke to it as well. We wanted to make sure that this APP is not only aligned to the zone, but when we're confronted by the corona, one of the plans that the president implemented was the economic reconstruction and recovery plan as a department and as a country that we need to have. So we started saying, which of our targets that are or that we're including seems to be aligned with us responding towards this reconstruction and recovery plan of government. And one of them, of course, is the presidential stimulus package, which is also included, which was included in the previous financial year. But this did not only relate to the ECT, as you know that the ECT has finally migrated to the DPE, but also to us, some of these targets relate to the creation of 160,000 and plus EPWP work opportunities. It relates to the monthly payment of social grants. This is paid by staff on behalf of DFD, the extension of the 350 for another financial year. One of the things that Minister challenged us to have, which we'll see and we'll provide detail, was for us as a department to lead the discussion and the narrative on the state of the people of South Africa. So it means that the Minister of Finance provides in terms of the state of our financial system of the budget vote. It needs to be also juxtaposed to the state of the people, which we have made commitments in terms of producing. And of course, there could be some of these, and I'll take it that probably the presentation has been read. But finally, what's important is we have made commitment of providing support to the women-owned companies, and our target is 40%. This is one of the most radical transformation that we want to implement to make sure that we are in line in terms of addressing the privacy, the injustices of the past, especially leaving out our women counterparts. The strategic focus of our department has not changed. What we have adopted over the 5 years is still for us in terms of the vision, the mission, and the impact segment. Our impact is about improving the quality of life of our people, and we still remain a caring and a self-reliant society that we want to establish. And but also what the revisions that we've made, what is interesting is on the values. We have adopted the clear values now in terms of providing our services in a respectful manner, making sure that as we provide our services, there's equality and equality, there's accountability, caring, human dignity, and good. And if you look at the first letters of each of these value words, it represents a issue which is a proper name that you have said. This is how we want to reach our communities and through these particular values that we have adopted. The next slide then speaks to what we had adopted to say, for us, if you want to start the trajectory in terms of reinventing ourselves, what are the things that we must do to change for us to begin to make sure that we are able to advance in this journey of reinventing ourselves? And I won't go to the detail, but this then presents all these little elements in terms of the digital transformation, making sure that the service delivery excellence, we inculcate the culture of thought leadership. We also bring issues of cost reduction. So these are some of the areas that when we engage with the portfolio, we said we need to make these changes. Of course, we need to prioritize. It's not all of them that will be done at the same time. And we are already seeing some of the difference with some of them. We are making inroads in terms of digital transformation. We are doing work in terms of the cost reduction, the service delivery excellence, and how we contribute to economic growth, as I've said, in terms of I can pick up some of the targets that are really directly linked to that. In terms of the outlook of our APP, in the next slide, this begins to say, as this department, this is how our APP looks. The APP that we are presenting before you, honorable members, have got 67 targets. And you could see when we juxtapose it with the APP of the previous financial year, we have made it 67 targets, but they're not the same. I'll show you where there's a difference, because it's 11 of them that are that we have changed in this. We've also added the 12 and so forth, and I'll give that, and the colleagues will then give the detail. But this table presents the detail in terms of what is the contribution of program one, program two, program three, and we have done an analysis to say how many of these targets are aligned to the minister's performance agreement. And you could see on the right next to the percentage, the way it says EPA is an executive performance agreement. We have looked at the NASP, which is a new a strategic plan of government, because they wanted us not only to focus on 5 years, but also focusing on 3 years, and it brought 8 targets to us. We can show you how many of these targets, 6 to 7, align to the MPSF, to the economic recovery, recovery plan, and the principle act. And that's what the minister is talking about in the opening. The next slide then begins to say, we have drafted the pie chart. And this pie chart, if you can see it, it says, what is, if someone had to look at all your targets, how can you start saying, what does this department do? And this pie chart, the larger proportion, about 58% of our target, about what the national department is in charge of. As the National Department of Social Development, we're in charge with developing policies and conducting research. And that's how the majority of our targets are aligned to that. Secondly, our responsibility, as we develop these policies, these norms and standards, these guidelines, we are also entrusted with building capacity of the provinces who then have to implement. Hence, the 30% of our targets are around the building capacity, and we'll show that as we provide the detail. And 7% is about compliance, which are much more about governance-related matters, and finally, it's about system development. The next slide then, which I won't go to detail, but what we have done, we have started to say, let's make an analysis. This is, we are continuing to implement the commitments made by the 6th administration. And the 6th administration, most of the targets are 5 years, but some of the areas would have been met. And of the previous APP, which had 67, as compared to the current one, the 11 APP have been removed. And some of them are because of many reasons. Some, they've already been met. We're already implementing the sector HR plan currently. We've done some consultations on the NPO policy framework. If you look at program size, there's quite a number. But significantly, it's because of the shift of this, ECD function as well to GPE. If you look at program four, there are about four targets that were there that have now shifted to GPE. Hence, this particular difference. And then the next slide, which I won't go through, slide 10 until slide number 13, they present then
the 52 targets that are remaining, which, as the acting DG had said, the detail will be provided by each individual DDG in terms of what is it. So I don't think we need to present this because they will be said. But there are new targets that we've introduced. One of the new targets that I've spoken about, and the total of the new targets, 15, is what I said, the minister had said, we need to start thinking about producing a report on the state of the people, and it's what we're going to present, and we'll see some of them, including for us to lead the work on the development of the social welfare and so forth, but we will give then the detail. If then I had to move to the last part on the program one now, which I can do, now presenting the detail in terms of the target. Under program one, we've got various functions, and program one starts from the office of the DG. It also includes corporate services, includes the branch where I'm acting strategy of transformation as well as finance. So under entity of society, which resides within the office of the DG and stakeholder management, there are two clear targets there. One, they have developed an entity of society framework, and they will continue to implement it in the next financial year. But also, if you move to the next financial year in terms of the fourth year and the fifth year, we would be doing some evaluation so that we see if it's been implemented properly. Also, in the next financial year, under stakeholder management and donor coordination, the department is making a commitment that it will implement the stakeholder and donor management strategy, which has got various aspects and it could be presented separately. Under monitoring and evaluation, we came before this committee and presented, I think in the previous financial year, that we will, over the next 3 years, developing an electronic M&E system, because there's been many challenges with how our work is. When you go to some of the district offices and the provinces, most of the work is still paper-based. And what we wanted to do, because it's not easy when you sit here at the press of a button, you will know what service has been provided, where and what. So that is the space we want to move to. And as part of those elements, as you say, we want to find ourselves digitizing of our system as part of the digital transformation agenda and the journey that we are undertaking. And secondly, we will be developing, as I said, the social welfare index. And part of the work that will be happening now in the current financial year is about contextualization. You go to other schools of thought, they refer to this as a social development index, others refer to the social welfare. So we need to step up and have a common understanding that exactly within our context, what is it that you want to do? And what are those indices? So that if we measure and say we are doing well, we should be knowing that this is about that. We have seen your UN comes with the HDI, and we need to learn from those exactly. So that if you want to see change, we are clear about what we want to measure. On finance, one of the commitments that we have made and what we have lived up to is about obtaining a qualified audit or opinion, and we want to continue doing that until the end of the seventh administration. Also under IT, because I'm not seeing Mr. Dara, maybe let me just conclude on this. Under IT, one of the areas is to continue to implement the National Integrated Social Protection Information System. This is about, honorable members, making sure that all our social protection interventions, we are able to look at them from a single view. If a particular child is receiving a service from a government department, such as attending school, you should be able to say, does this child who is going to school and from a poor household, does it receive a grant? Does it able to go to an ECD also funded by government? And if she progresses or he progresses in life and completes matric, to what extent are we able to link using our system to say this child also qualifies for additional funding, post-matric funding, such as NSFAS? So this is what we are building. Currently, we are able to tell the story, but we want to expand it to include other interventions and services. Even to say, to what extent that these children also, you'll find a media database of children with the conflict and those that are in conflict with the law. So these are some of the stories that we want to tell from a single view. Under human capital, we will be in the current financial year, as in our plan, submit our government-wide sector strategies for the employment of social service professionals. As we understand, we need to respond to the challenges of a limited number of social service professionals that we have in the country, and especially in the height of the increase of these episodes, such as these floods We need to provide a lot of psychosocial support, but also this is further compounded by increase in the violence in terms of the social ills or gender-based violence or substance abuse. So we need to make an increase in terms of the number of social service professionals that we have. So we'll be submitting this strategy to cabinet for them to consider. The final part under program one is that unlike all other APPs that we have had, as the management of this department, we have taken a conscious decision to say all legislative and bill processes that is now at the stage of being managed by legal services, all those targets need to move to program one under the legal services. Hence, you see this long list of all these different legislations, such as the draft, SASA Amendment Bill, your regulations in terms of Children's Amendment Bill, which we are also forging ahead, the Social Development Bill, and so forth, and up to the children as well as the NPOP. We have taken the conscious decision to say, because program managers, while they are content owners, but the stage of where these bills are is within the ambit of our legal services or the legal rules. Hence, these targets are there because we want to make sure that we hold everyone accountable and need everyone to be clear in terms of what is it they do. That is where I will end in terms of the legal services. I will now allow my acting DG, that's our acting CFO, take us through the social assistance, which is about the transfer funds. But I want to thank you, Honorable Chairperson, as well as all the honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fanny Esterhazen will take over, our acting CFO will take over.
Thanks, good morning, honourable members, Minister and DM. So for program two, our social assistance program, what we've changed in this specific area is that a year or two ago, the AG had the issue on the way that we craft our indicators. It was merely saying branches in terms of social grant beneficiaries. And we were actually, the idea issues with the way that we crafted this. So we had to change our output indicator in terms of this. So it basically reads now the monthly payment of social grant beneficiaries as administered and paid by SASA on behalf of PSD. There you can see what we've changed in terms of this. The allocations is merely in terms of what we received from the National Treasury. The allocation, the 248 for the first year, that includes now the extension of the 350 grant. That's why there's the first year, there's an increase. In the other 2 years, there's a decrease because the 350 has not been extended for the other 2 years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Acting CFO. We come now to program three, which is primarily the program that deals that relates to a lot of the policy work around income support for various types of groups in the country. We have done quite a lot of work in the past couple of in the past 2 years or so on new policy work around the children grants and also for maternal benefits that we started to do some research on in the past 2 years. In this coming year, we want to develop a consultation report. We are beginning to consult with various groups on the policy relating to how to integrate children's grant beneficiaries with other government services. Understanding the premise of this being that when you provide income to a child, it's not adequate for the child's development. You also need to have other interventions. But we want to use the child support grant because it's accessible to 12 million children, that we want to ensure that in addition to the child support grant, they are able then to access all the other benefits that the government especially provides in a way that is seamless and easy, and we're able to keep track of what other benefits are being provided for those children so that we can deepen the impact of the development investment that the country is making on these children. Hence, they need to then consult and prepare the consultation report, which will then inform the final policy that we will be taking forward to be able to implement this. And then similarly with the policy on maternal support for vulnerable pregnant women and children, we are aware of the impact that the child support grant has done. But we believe that if we were to be able to actually catch these children basically on the day that they are born, we will be in a better position to have the impact that you want to have in terms of providing the support to them. So the idea is to make sure that before we wait for the children to be born, that we start to provide some support to the parents while they are still pregnant, because we believe that the in vitro nutrition that the parents get will have an impact on the developmental outcome, long-term developmental outcome of the child. But we also believe that the woman in her own right needs to be supported while she's pregnant, because this is the time that she's doing very important work for the country, but she's also at her most vulnerable if she does not have income. So the idea is to provide support at that early stage. We will be now in the current year doing the consultations and prepare the consultation report at the end of the financial year to say exactly how this policy should then be taken forward. With regards to the policy on income support, of course, we are aware of the 350 grant and the impact that it has had in the country. We've been talking for a very long time about the need to also support people who are in the working age group of 18 to 59 who are unable to access income through the normal labor market. So the idea in this one is to say, as we implement the 350 grant, how do we create something more cohesive, more coherent, more long-term, more reliable and sustainable for this age group, for them also to be able to access income? And the idea then is to also prepare the consultation report on this. We've done quite a lot of technical work, some of which has been in the public domain. We will be in this current year finalizing that and refining it so that then we come up with the consultation report that says this is our proposed approach then for the way in which the income support should be provided to these people beyond the 350 grant that we are currently going to be implementing. In addition to that, we have changed the Social Assistance Act in 2021. We made amendments to it to make sure that we improve the way in which people access the appeals mechanism in the country, so that those who are unhappy about SASSA decisions don't have to first start with going to SASSA for reconsideration, which has been the practice up until now. What we are wanting to do is say that going forward, they must be able to go directly to the appeals tribunal, and we will be publishing the regulations very soon. In this month, we'll be publishing the regulations. Now, because we'll be starting this from scratch and taking over the appeals process that SASSA was doing and removing a lot of the appeals that would then come to us, we are targeting to achieve 70% of appeals within 90 days of receipt, which is the legislation that we are committing to. Over time, as we get our systems ready, as we get used to the high numbers of appeals and we improve our systems, we are hoping then to increase the target that we set for ourselves, that it will increase to 80 and 90% over the MTF years. But in this starting year, although we are setting a target of 70%, we hope to achieve much more than that in terms of making sure that everyone's appeal gets dealt with within the 3 month period. And then the other goal that we are setting up is to produce an audit report on the disability grant medical review process. You will understand we had some serious challenges in the way that the disability review was happening, and there were some challenges in the way that it was being implemented. We want to make sure from the inspectorate side that we look at that approach and see what improvements can be made, and we are prioritizing this for the current financial year, and in future years we'll be looking at auditing other systems that SASSA uses in order to implement the social grants framework. The next slide speaks to the voluntary cover for people who are working in the informal sector. We believe that they also should be able to participate in social security and be able to make contributions for themselves, even though they are earning incomes that are irregular. So we've prepared a draft policy on this, and we want to submit that draft policy on voluntary cover for them to at least to the SPCHD, the social cluster, for consideration, so that it can over the period then get approved for implementation. We hope that at the end of the MTF period, we'll be able to do legislation, in fact, that creates a platform for people who are working in the informal sector to also be able to participate and make contributions to save for their own retirement, and also be able to provide for themselves in terms of becoming disabled, or if they should die, that their beneficiaries should have something to live on. We also want to do this. The Social Security Bill has to do with the more comprehensive overarching social security reform agenda that the department has set, which includes not only the social grants, but also the social insurance provisions that the country has, or where people make contributions for themselves to be able to access benefits, and also incorporating some of the savings that are done within the private sector. The idea here is to create a social security system that is more coherent, that is also more inclusive of everybody in the country, and caters for people at different parts of their life cycle, whether they are working or not working, or they've retired, or they become disabled. So we create a more seamless social security system that includes everyone. So in the current financial year, the aim is to develop the white paper on this. You will recall that we published a green paper and withdrew it. We are busy making refinements to it. Now we will release it again. And then in the current financial year, refine it into a white paper, which in the 2024-25 financial year should then become a social security bill that is tabled to cabinet for approval. The final thing we hope to do in this year is to do a second iteration of the social security review that we published last year. This one is more about beginning to popularize and demystify the idea of social security in the country and get a South African society to begin to have conversations about what kind of social security system they want to see, how it should interact with society, how it should interact with the economy, how it should interact with the labor market. So we are hoping in this current year that we'll produce the second volume of the social security review, and we'll improve the marketing of it so that there's more conversation around it, and people can begin to buy into what social security systems do in promoting and contributing to the economic growth of the country. I will hand over now, Chairperson, to Isabella Sigawana, who will then be presenting program four to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Acting DG. I must apologize that I'm not feeling so well today, and pardon me for even the voice, but I will continue the presentation. Let me acknowledge the presence of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, Chairperson, and members of the Select Committee, and say good morning. Chairperson, I'm presenting Program 4, which constitutes 33% of the total APP of the department. And having said that, I think the majority of our targets are also under operational plans because we could not put everything under the APP. Now, as the national department, the majority of our work is on policy development or policy reform, and we also ensuring that once we have developed those policies, we capacitate, you know, stakeholders so that we can be able, you know, to have a common understanding and have effective implementation of the policies. But what is most important is to ensure that our policies, you know, cascade and they make impact, you know, to people on the ground, and therefore it's important for us to ensure that we monitor those policies. So the APP that we are presenting, we have in majority of the targets, you know, on those areas that I have spoken about, which we have 29% on monitoring, we have 20%, we have 33% on capacity building, and we have 12% on policy reform. Others, and we also do a lot of prevention and early intervention when we're looking at education and awareness. So moving to the presentation, there are five areas that I'm going to cover: the children's services, which is basically children's legislation and families with HIV and AIDS, and then professional social services and older persons, social crime prevention and anti-substance abuse, office on the right of a child, because we have signed, we have ratified with other countries, and therefore we have obligations, you know, to comply. Now, when coming to the slide that is at hand, we're having 24 targets, as I have said, and therefore I'll just, you know, take out some few targets and put emphasis on them. We know that families are the cornerstone of communities, and they are the socialization of the the individuals. They shape, you know, how individual members are supposed to be. And therefore, as the department, we are going to look into the revision of the white paper, which was approved by Cabinet in 2015, which for us is a principal policy ensuring that we strengthen families and empower, you know, them to be resilient. And we are saying that for this financial year, we are going to ensure that we take this revised white paper through the departmental structures for it to be approved by Cabinet. That's the first thing. The second issue that is very critical in this slide is about the parenting, you know, as part of, you know, also empowering members of the families. We are going to look at the parenting program for teenagers, which we call it Sinovuyo. I'm sure all of us know about, you know, the crisis that we are having in the country with regards to teenage pregnancy. And therefore, it is very much important that as the department, we implement both prevention and early intervention measures to ensure that, you know, we prevent this teenage pregnancy. But at the same time, we ensure that, you know, those children who are already, who find themselves there, are able, you know, to be empowered on how to deal with the current situation. The third one is still under family preservation program, where we are going to monitor, you know, the implementation of this family preservation programs in provinces and by the society at large, because for us, you know, the issue of family preservation is also a multi-sectoral issue and it cuts across all. So those indicators that we are going to look at are pre-marriage counseling, for example, your marriage enrichment and fatherhood programs, for example, just to mention a few. And the other one that is very critical in this slide is about the issue of teenage pregnancy, where as the department, you know, it's a multi-sectoral issue. It cuts across all the government departments and other structures. But as the department, we've got a DSD-specific integrated school health program that we have developed, and we are going to monitor implementation in the in provinces. The next slide, please. Yes, next slide, please. Next slide. The second program is the HIV and AIDS. Sorry,
the computer is stuck now, but you can continue.
Okay, the second focus area is HIV and AIDS. And here, although we are highlighting the issue of HIV and AIDS, the social behavior programs here that we are going to focus on in terms of capacitating the social service practitioners, they touch across all the social ills that, you know, the country is faced up with. For example, we've got a program such as YOLO, You Only Live Once, where it is targeting children from 14 to 24 or 25, yeah. Children, sorry, I have been distracted here. Okay, so yes, this program is very critical because it's the prevention program that targets, you know, all the social ills and focusing on young people together with, you know, other related programs such as your CHOMI and your men's and boys championing change. So this is one of the areas that we are going to ensure that we intensify for this financially. And we have also introduced some of the targets that focus on ensuring that we provide core package of services to our vulnerable children, obviously orphaned and vulnerable children. Next slide, please. Here we are going to focus on ensuring that we strengthen child protection services, the issue of adoption, where we want to make sure that, you know, everyone in the community who want to access adoption access it. Hence, we are capacitating our social workers, you know, in government, but also we're looking at issues of child abuse and so on, so that we can have ensure that there is intersectoral approach, because we know also it is an intersectoral issue that needs to be tackled in that way for us to be able to win. And issue of foster care, we need to be proactive to ensure that there is a program of action action that we are going to monitor and ensure that, you know, we deal with the issue of foster care at an early in early stage. Next slide, please. Under all assistance and professional services, most of the targets we have put them under operational plans. Here we are going to focus on ensuring that there is readiness assessment that we are going to conduct to ensure that, you know, when we implement the white paper on social development, we understand, you know, the status and the level at which we are as a country, so that we can be able to identify gaps and ensure that we take the right approach in the implementation. The issue of the gangsterism under social crime prevention and substance abuse is a cross. Gangsterism is a cross issue that no single department can be able to deal with. It really needs all of us, you know, to put our heads together, especially ensuring that the community is involved. Hence, we are saying that as a department, you know, working together with the other government department and being led by SAPS as the one that is leading in terms of the overall strategy that has been developed, we are going to continue implementing the strategy that we have developed as Department of Social Development. And also implement the prevention to deal with social ills. Next slide, please. The issue of GBV also is one of the areas that we are going to focus on, targeting the hotspot areas, but also ensuring that we also capacitate, you know, individuals within government, and we are going to ensure that, you know, we reach to those that are of critical importance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that we can now move to program five, which is led by Mr. Peter Netshipale. He will take us through this section of the presentation.
Thanks very much, Chair, and the honorable members, Minister, and the Deputy Minister. I'm going to present the presenting program five, which is the program that is created to advance the social development mandate, specifically implementation of Chapter 11 of the NDP Constitution and the priorities of government. The programs in the department covers upon 33% of all targets, and it covers a wide range of areas that deals with social policy, special projects, community mobilization, youth development, poverty alleviation and food security, population development, and the NPO issues, registration, monitoring, and funding coordination. With regard to the social policy, I think you might have had the first presenter on the report that we need to produce on the state of the people of South Africa, that we will, this financial year, will produce that report that will serve and that we will be able to deal with before the next summer. And we will also create over 176,000 EPWP work opportunities. This is one of the programs that create employment en masse in the department and contribute to curb unemployment in the country. And over the years, we have seen a lot of, only this financial year, we have gone above 200,000 employment through this program. The next program is mobilizing communities, which is the cornerstone of what communities need to do in to create a resilience within communities in all nine provinces. But one of the areas that we venturing in is to begin to implement, to ensure that we encompass the district development model. So what we are going to be doing is to capacitate. We selected 18, we might go over that, to ensure that the districts are mobilized, they are able to form part of the one plan, one district one district, one plan, one budget, and coordinate the participation of our department in the creation and the implementation of DDL. And we will also train our community development practitioners on the community development practice and methodology to ensure that whether it's development, whether it's any initiative within communities, is coherent and follow sequences and be able to be measurable in terms of what they've done. And we will also then, we have developed a policy, a national community development policy, that during this financial year we will present it to cabinet for approval. And this policy will guide everyone who goes to community to do anything within the community, because we have been seeing people going, but their effort and their responsibility are not really guided by anything. So the policy will guide in terms of how, what they should do and how they should do what they're supposed to do so that we implement. The next slide is about our contribution in the youth development area. We implement the NYDA policy, but the department has produced our own policy that we need to implement, which has the pillars of development, integration, and ensuring that once the youth are mobilized, we are able to direct them and also guide them in terms of accessing economic opportunities, employment, and any other skills that we need to have. We will also then train 600. This is on top of what all 9 provinces are training. We have selected just few so that we can showcase the 600 on school development program that will create this youth to be employable. On nonprofit organizations, we administer the Nonprofit Organizations Act 71 of 1997. And one of the things that we'll be doing is the amendment of that act. But what we are required to do is to register any community-based organization that wants to have a legal status. And also, once they are registered, they need to submit their reports so that we can scrutinize. The Act requires that the department scrutinize their reports. If there's any other queries or any maladministration, we are able to tell them where it is, how is, this happens. We will also capacitate the and implement what you call the NPO mentorship program. This program is, once you are registered and they are newly registered, you need to be provided with guidance on how you need to run your nonprofit organization. And the best approach is to mentor those for a period of 24 months. And we will also ensure that those newly registered NPOs are capacitated, but they are guided. There's a difference between mentorship and capacity building. The last two targets that we have relates to the NPO funding coordination. We have developed a policy which is being implemented, but it will continue to build capacity of the provinces so that they can implement the policy appropriately, and also to curb the issue of the funding delays in provinces. We have developed, we'll be implementing the NPO sector payment system, so which is uniform, that will assist province to pay faster and according to the schedule. On the sustainable livelihood and the food security program, you are aware that we have got systems which we provide food, but what we do is to develop a report on the implementation of the National Food and Nutrition Security Plan that has been developed. We will also, as part and parcel of our responsibility, is to ensure that those that are benefiting from social protection, including grants and others, we will link them to livelihood opportunities to ensure that they are sustainable in themselves. We have revised the livelihood framework. This financial year, we will submit that to cabinet for approval. and also conduct a study on the design implementation of the sustainable livelihood program so that we can amend the existing ones. The last program is on population development, wherein we will monitor and report on the implementation of the population policy that we have, and also implement adolescent sexual and reproductive health and rights programs. This is program that also is implemented to curb issues of teenage pregnancy and other areas in the country. We'll also produce report on the implementation of the framework on the integrated population policy in the district development model, and train 92 municipalities on its integration. This is to assist that whatever is there is integrated within the IDP of the municipalities that we have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nechipale. Chairperson, this completes the 67 targets that we have set up for ourselves. We will now go into the allocation, the budget allocation that we'll be using in order to implement these targets. Mr. Esther Hazen will take us through. Thanks.
Thank you, Brenda. Before Mr. Esther Hazen, I just want to remind you about time, if we can move a little bit faster. Thank you, Mr. Esther Hazen.
Sure. Thanks, Chairperson. We'll do that. We'll be quick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I promise I'll be faster than the speed of light. So there are a few things I need to illustrate to the committee. The first slide just illustrates the allocations for the three financial years. And we all know that the spike in this financial year is because of the 350. I want to go to slide number 42. Next one. Yeah. So the additional allocations we were set this financial year, one back. We didn't have any budget decreases. No, backwards. The explanation, yeah, that one. So just in terms of our social assistance grants, we received 44 billion rand additional for the extension of the 350 grant to cover about 10.5 million eligible persons in terms of the age between 19 and 59. Then also we received for year 2 and 3, allocations 5.5 and 6.7 billion for inflationary allocations for the social grants. Remember, the prior financial year, they covered significantly on the social grants. And this is National Treasury's way of just adjusting the numbers that it matches the number of beneficiaries on the system. Then also the extension of the top-up child support grant for double orphans. They supported that. The allocation there is only for year 2 and 3, 687 million and 871 million. The rest of that will be coming from savings from the old age grants over the period. Then on our operational side, we received 11.4 million for only for 1 year. That is for that once-off payments, the cash gravity that will be paid or was already paid in the prior financial year. So it's just the extension of that we received additional for that. So just in terms of the various programs, one could see only there's very below inflation increases over the MTF period for all our programs. If we look at year 2 and year 3, there's decreases, and we have to deal with that. If you look at the next slide, just in terms of the SCOA allocations, our COE is still not yet adjusted. We have to ensure that we still stay within that ceiling for our compensation of employees. We could see the inflation there is very little that we receive. Our goods and services remains operational, although there's small marginal increases in terms of that, but we will manage within that allocation. Then the rest in terms of transfer payments and CAPEX, it's also normal inflation increases. Chairperson, that is it. Just in terms of the recommendation, we want the select committee to note and support the DSD IPP for 2023 as well as the financial tables that we just presented to substantiate our IPP performance targets, and also wanted to support the budget vote for DSD on the 13th of May. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, that presents, that is our APP, just to correct the date there. The 13th of May is not the date yet. We will we have not been, the date has been changed, so we'll share the correct date, but we do make these recommendations and hope that the select committee will support our budget vote, whatever the date is going to be for it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda. Are you done with everything?
Yes, Chairperson, we are done with everything. We are in your hands now for the questions.
Okay, thanks a lot. Can I then take the opportunity to thank the department for your presentation? Members, as I've indicated in the beginning of this meeting can only run up until 12 o'clock. So I've got an indication from Member Maleka and Member Christians for questions. If there is any other member who wants to pose a question, you must raise your hand now, because otherwise I will ask that you then submit written questions and the department can come back to us with a written answer. So without any further ado, I will give Member Maleka the platform to raise a question.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the minister and the officials from the department and the members and the staff, and welcome the presentation from the department. Chairperson, my question is, the department is planning to process 80% of my video is not coming well. Can I switch off my video? Chairperson, the department is planning to process 80% of submitted non-profit organizations, NPOs, annual report within 2 months of receipt during 2022 and 2023 financial year. However, the percentage does not fully communicate and magnitude of the work. Can that department maybe clarify what 80% of NPO annual reports constitute and how many NPOs annual reports the department is anticipating receiving this financial year? My other question, Chairperson, according to the APP of the department for 2022-2023, in the 2020 and 2021 financial year, the department received a total of 29,780 NPO reports and only processed 18,809. Of the 18,809 processed, 17,950, which means 60.3%, were processed within 2 months, as the department only achieved 60.3% in the previous financial year. How will the department ensure that it processes 80% of the receipt annual report within 2 months of receipt? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Maleka. Can we move to Member Christians, please?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to put my video off because I'm concerned about network issues. Chairperson, I have the following questions to the department. Now, there is a concern that across provinces, the entire provincial departments of social development, we've seen a consistent reduction in funding. Now, how will the department counter this devastating impact of funding, especially in programs such as the social welfare programs for 2022 and 2023? There is especially a concern because the DSD grant has now been shifted, the 350 Rand, there's now been a delay in that grant. So added to that, the reduction of funding seems to me disastrous for the social development department across programs. I would like to take note of two provinces or three provinces, really. The Northwest Department, for example, and the Northern State Department, huge budget cuts. The one department by 909 million rand for 2022-2023, and the other Northwest Department by 173 million rand. Now, especially in the Northern Cape Department, where poverty is one of the highest in of all the provinces, how will the Department of Social Development counteract this devastation of the reduction in these budgets? And then my second question is, the department has discontinued the social worker scholarship for the 2022-2023 financial year. Now, additionally to that, the department has also been unable to absorb the previous social worker graduates due to a lack of, I suppose, planning by government. Now, what will happen? Because number one, there now has wasteful expenditure has now taken place there with hundreds of graduates sitting at home, unable to be employed. Again, it rises the employment rate amongst our young people. And then secondly, there is a rise in social ills. Drugs are on the, drug usage is on the increase, criminality is on the increase, etc. So if the social worker program has been discontinued, what does the Department of Social Development have in place to counteract these social ills in our communities? And then I just want to know, we've recently heard about SASSA's reapplications that must take place. So I would like to know what the time frame of that grant will be. The 300, and I'm speaking specifically about the 350 grant that members of the community must now reapply for that grant. What impact will it have on members of the community, especially the very poor, and especially in these times where KwaZulu-Natal has seen such devastation? The delays in this, in receiving this grant will have various impacts. For example, in the Northern Cape, there's transport issues to get back to post offices, etc., to reapply for that grant. The queues will be longer. We are going into winter. People will be standing in queues, the old, the vulnerable, the disabled. How are we going to counteract that? How will we see to it that this grant, this 350, will be managed as quickly as possible that those people get that grant? And then my last question is about the teenage pregnancy crisis in the country. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more on how the Department of Social Development will work together with other departments such as the Department of Education and the Department of Health, etc. Together with that, the rollout of the programs, community-based programs, how will that be out? Which provinces will be targeted in the initial stages? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will hand in the rest in written form.
Thank you, Member Christian and Member Maleka, for your for your prompt questions. Minister, my concern is it has been addressed by the two previous speakers. I am extremely worried about the social development budget cuts in the provinces. If we can really, I understand that there was budget cuts everywhere in all departments across the country, but the impact of this budget cuts, if you and the department can just give us some clarity on the reduction in the funding to provincial departments and how it will, if we can have more evidence for the complementary plans across the provincial department of social development to counter the devastating impact of the budget cuts in their funding. And then the one concern was also raised by Member Christians about the issue of social workers, as we are always reminded that we don't have enough social workers in the country. How will this, the impact of this program that's not going to be funded, the social worker scholarship, what will the impact be? And also the issue that the social work graduates won't be employed by the department, also by the provincial departments. Is there a strategy to continue with the absorption of social work graduates within the department nationally and provincially, and also with the NGO sector, and also with the Department of Education, especially in the Department of Education, where we are really feeling the need of social workers, and specifically in the rural areas. I won't go into other questions. Like Member Kristen said, if there is more questions from members, they can put it on paper, send it to the administration, who can then forward it to the department. But thank you very much for the presentation, Minister, and your department. I will hand it over back to you, Minister. Thank you very much.
Yeah, she's still here. Thank you.
Is the Minister still here, Brenda, or because I know she's got also connectivity problems?
Yes, she is. Can I suggest her person, she might be struggling also to connect. She did indicate that there's a connection issue on her side. But I think that what we can do, we can respond to some of the questions as they have been raised, Chairperson. Thank you very much for all of the questions. What I will do is maybe give a kind of overarching thing first, and then request some colleagues to respond more deeply on the questions. The first thing, I think it's important to clarify, Chairperson, that historically social development has been underfunded. And we have looked like we have a big budget, primarily because of the big allocation that you get for social grants, but that actually constitutes like 95% to 99% of the DSD budget. So we've actually historically been doing quite a lot of work with very little money. And in the current financial year, you recall that we have also now shared the ECD function and moved it over to GDE, which could account for what seems like very drastic reductions in our allocations. But our CFO might be able to embellish that point a little bit more. But it does not mean, though, that the allocations that we have is adequate for all the responsibilities that we have. We have historically been practicing the approach of doing as much as we can with the little that we do have. There are some things that we started to do in order to come and try to live within the budget. The new strategic approach that we've taken that Haban was describing, more close work between ourselves and FASA and NGA, so that we can share resources and work more cohesively together, so that our impact will be much stronger, even though our budgets are being reduced. We have been working in this regard for quite a long time, but we do also have strategies around how to deal with the reduction in the allocation and the fact that we don't have money to absorb the number of social workers that we'd like to absorb. There is a plan and a strategy in place in order to deal with that. And I'll ask Kumbula Ndaba to talk to that question that has been raised around social workers. And then I'll also ask Fanny, Mr. Esther Hazen, to talk to the budget losses that we have experienced. And then Mr. Nishipali will start the responses with the question regarding the NPOs and how we hope to achieve a higher target given their past experiences in that respect. So I'm going to ask Mr. Nishipali to start first, and then he'll be followed by Fanny on the budget allocations. Then Isabella will talk to some of the issues around the social ills and teenage pregnancy work. And then we will conclude it with Kumbula on the absorption of social workers. In that order, Nishipali first.
Well, thanks very much, DDG. There were
two questions with relates that relates to NPO reporting and the processing of their reports. In terms of the NPO Act Section 18(1) and 2AB, the all registered non-profit organizations must report back. We have got currently over 250,000 registered NPOs. Not all of them must report because others need to report after a year. Over the years, we set a target which drives us to do more for what we are supposed to do so that we can assist communities. That's why we set a target of 80. In the past 2 years, we have been under strain due to COVID. Some of the work, they must submit papers that must be scrutinized. So the past 2 years, we changed our approach, and the target were reviewed to 30% because of we experienced that. I think the Honorable was checking on the 2020-2021 financial years. That in that year, we have been struggling because we requested them to send all the reports via the online, and some of them are unable. So in that case, we requested that our target be lowered. But in all reports, the percentages we're saying is that if we, on a yearly basis, we receive under normal circumstances, more than 50,000 NPOs need to report. We receive that. We'll see that in 2019, we received over 55,000 reports. But last year, it was only 80,000 due to the challenges of the COVID. We are expecting now that we are back to normal, that we will receive over 50,000 reports, of which all those must be scrutinized, and the NPOs are given a compliance letter. When anybody wants to fund an NPO, they will request, is this NPO compliant to the Act? Then we then say yes. Yes, meaning they have submitted the report, we have seen the report, and we have scrutinized it, and they're in good shape. So we want to do 80% of those or more so that we don't disadvantage any nonprofit organization in terms of their funding. Even on the issue of what the acting DG have raised, in 2017, we requested Treasury to do a study on the funding of the NPOs and for social development services. The Treasury itself found that we are underfunded drastically to do welfare services. Even in the NPO funding, we were in that years underfunded by 9.2 billion. So I think the Social Development Department is underfunded in terms of to deliver its services, and it's something that we are working with Treasury. I think in the subsequent year, 2018, the Treasury gave us an additional funding called Nawongo Extra Funding for the CYCC so that we will be able to. Then we hope that our request and our working together with Treasury will be able to attract more funding for the services. Thank you very much.
Thanks, so just in terms of the budget cuts, I'm looking at the decreases that was done in the 21-22 financial year that was imposed by National Treasury that filtered down to the provincial treasury. It was a significant cut of about 2 billion year on year. But what also is now additional, not a budget cut, but a budget adjustment because of the function shift of ECD. Remember, there was about 4 billion that was taken from all the provincial departments of social development to shift the ECD function to basic education. So yes, it is a significant drop, but we are working with our CFOs looking at the implications of that. We do have the numbers. We can share the numbers with the members of the committee to see what is the real impact? We haven't done, we've done that exercise in the prior financial year, but there was no new budget reductions imposed by Treasury for this financial year over and above that was done in the prior financial year. Thanks.
Thanks, Bunny. Thank you. Followed by Isabella.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Let me start with the issue of the teenage pregnancy. I think we all agree that the issue of teenage pregnancy is a cross-cutting issue, and we cannot really win it if we're only looking at, you know, working in silos. But safely to say that we need to start where the child is, because it's also about the issue of child protection, which emphasizes the need for strengthening our families and empowering, you know, the families on how to, you know, to instill and raise children in a way that, you know, children will be able, you know, to assert themselves and understand, you know, that no one has to take advantage of them. But also the issue of communities, because if we work alone as government departments, we won't be able, you know, to deal with this. The perpetrators, these children that get pregnant, most of the time they are impregnated by people who are in the communities. So it's very much important to work with communities so that we empower these communities to take ownership of, you know, protecting their own children in the communities. But what is important for us to be able, you know, to work on a collaborative and integrated manner is also instilling the issue of DGM model that we are talking about, where, you know, everybody will be part of the team and will be able, you know, to come up. You know, we have the ISHP plan that we have come up with needs to be accounted for. It should not just be a plan, but there should be, you know, a structure that will ensure that there is accountability, each and every stakeholder account in terms of what are the issues, you know, that they have to deal with. And as I said earlier, you know, there are programs that are already in place, you know, the social behavioral programs that we have developed as the Department of Social Development. When you look at the package of services, it's not only inwardly looking. It talks about issues of health and social development that we need to deal with, which emphasizes that, you know, health must come in, Department of Basic Education must come in, the other stakeholders also must come in. The issue of accountability and instilling the issue of implementation of the DDM model will assist in terms of ensuring that we deal with this issue at the prevention level and at an early intervention level. That's the first one with the teenage pregnancy. The issue of now that we are no longer training social workers and we still have the social ills, what do we have to do to counter the social ills? Yes, social workers are very much important, and as the department, I think Minister is always emphasizing that it's important for us, you know, to come up with a strategy of ensuring that this employment of social workers does not become only the responsibility of the Department of Social Development, because social workers are also needed in schools, they are needed they are needed in correctional services, and that is why the department is now currently coming up with a strategy, an integrated strategy, to see how best can we try and come up, you know, with a strategy that will ensure that we really look at what is available and how can other government departments come into play, because if it is much important that we have, you know, even social workers at schools where children are, because teachers are the first people, you know, to identify if a child is in distress. So the issue of us working together collaboratively in this effort is going to assist. But the other thing, we also need to look at other cadre of social service practitioners, your social auxiliary workers, and be able to say what is it that we can, delegate to social auxiliary workers or to your child and youth care workers, so that we really utilize the limited resources that we are having in terms of social workers. Thank you.
Dava, do you want to augment what Isabella was saying?
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, Minister. Well, I think that Isabella has really covered the question. Let me just confirm that indeed we have a draft sector strategy for the employment of social service professionals. And this strategy is an overarching strategy. So its focus is quite broad in the sense that we are looking at employment of social workers in the provinces, employment of social workers in the private sector, as well as different national departments. Now, we've been engaging with quite a number of national departments to look at what is possible. And the idea with this, of course, is to work towards a bid, a collective or a joint bid by the departments, which bid is going to be made to National Treasury. And the intention is clearly to get funding for the employment of social workers, because in our engagement with various departments, and I can make any of them as an example, education, their priority would first and foremost be educators before they employ social workers. So social workers, important as they are for them, but they become secondary. So when you have the reduction in budget, they tend to look at what is primary to them. And so these are the issues that we are actually grappling with and we are dealing with. And the joint bid is actually going to be addressing that. And we will be tabling this bid before National Treasury beginning June. We've covered almost half of the departments as we speak now. And the rest of the department will cover before the end of the financial year. There was a question about contracting of social workers. Of course, we've said to the departments and the provinces that they should consider continue with the employment of the contract social workers. But that they should do so within what is available in their own budget whilst we are actually making all of these efforts. And some of them are actually responding positively. But of course, this is not a panacea to the problem. We are looking at a long-term solution to the problem. And I think that with the support of the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee, we will be able to succeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kumbula. Chairperson, there was the last question around the 350 grant asked by yourself and Honorable Christian. I think in that one, what we can explain now is, of course, you recall that the previous 350 grant was issued in terms of the disaster legislation, during the disaster period. So in the new iteration, when the president made the announcement, we then had to create a new legislative platform for it since the disaster has been lifted. And we had to put it into our social assistance legislation. And in that regard, it has taken us quite a while, and I know that there's a lot of impatience and concern in the community around when is this thing going to start. But I'm happy to say that we have actually now opened, SASSA has opened the application for the new iteration so that people are now able to apply for the new grant. It has just taken us a while because in addition to changing the regulations and putting them under the Social Assistance Act, we also had to obtain concurrence from the Ministry of Finance in order for us to be able to implement the new grant. The key issue also is to recall that in the way that we crafted the regulations, we had to ensure that we stay within the allocation that we have been given of 44 billion rand. So we had to now come up with criteria that is quite similar, but there are some additional things that we had to add into the criteria to ensure that we are able then to render the grant to all of the needy people, but also have to stay within that 44 billion allocation that we have. Minister will be giving a media briefing in order to explain exactly what the criteria is and what informed it and so on. So we'll be dealing with all of those questions as soon as Minister is able to give the briefing. But in the meantime, we have at least opened the platform for people to be able to apply. I think with effect from Saturday, people are able to apply for the grant again. We're having to do that because it's under a new legislation and no longer under the disaster relief, under the Disaster Management Act. That is why it's important for people to apply. We're asking additional things in order to enable us to also be able to apply the criteria in terms of the Social Assistance Act and not in terms of the Disaster Management Act. But the details of exactly what is the criteria and all of those things, Minister will be giving a briefing, but we hope that people, we already actually have applications. I know that Sasa was telling me in two days ago or yesterday that we already have more than 2 million applications. So people are applying and we will be processing those applications. When Sasa comes also to present their APP, they will also be able to deal with some of the other issues relating to the implementation of the 350 grant. And I think it's important to also remind the select committee, the 350 grant is still being rendered electronically. There will not be any queues for it. People just apply through electronic means. Where the queues will be, it's only on the other grants, as has been the case. But SASA has been doing quite a lot of work in terms of improving the customer service experience that people have when they go to apply for the grant. But there will not be any queue with regard to the 350 grant. The application process is still electronic, and even the responses to it is also electronic. The appeals will also be electronic, so there will not be any requirement at any point for anyone to queue for the 350 grant. We are also looking at making sure that the payments also, people are able to access the money in their bank accounts and so on, so that even in that regard, they can access it when they wish and also continue to use retailers and so forth to be able to access the grant. So the work that we are doing, that SASA is doing also, is to make sure that as far as possible, we reduce and we make sure that people are able to access this benefit without having to stand in any queue. But they will be able to unpack the details of this when they present their annual performance plan and also when the minister has the briefing to explain how the new iteration is going to be implemented. I think this covers all of the questions that we have been asked. I hope we have responded to all of them adequately. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Brenda, and the rest of your team for that answering session. I've noticed that the minister is back with us. Minister, if you want to give any final remarks, I will hand over to you now.
Yeah. Since she is on the platform, but I'm not sure, she might be struggling still with connection. Yeah, we're just checking that. Because I see that she's still muted also.
Did you manage to get out of the minister?
We're trying to do that, Chairperson.
Okay.
If you allow us a second just to check what's happening, because she is there, but I don't know why she's not speaking, or she might also be.
Good morning, Chairperson. Sorry if I may through you.
Yes, my dear.
Sorry, she's in cabinet at the moment. She had intended to come in close, but I think she's probably still engaged in cabinet.
Okay, thank you, Tulani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you. Sorry, I was also on the other line with the CEO of of SASA, but I have.
You are muted, Minister.
You muted yourself, Minister.
Oh, my apology. I'm talking to myself. My apology, Chairperson. I was on the line with the CEO of SASA with regard to what Brenda was speaking to right now. And I do want to indicate, Chairperson, that yes, we will communicate the due processes, and we will communicate particularly why we needed to get people to reapply, because I do want to say to this meeting that we have absolutely no intention of not paying the 350, the people that deserve to be paid the 350. And I think Brenda did explain a bit, but as we are all aware, SASA is coming to make the presentations next week. And I think that by next week, a lot of the issues would have been resolved. But what I also want to indicate, Chairperson, is that we to pay the 350 to the people who actually deserve to get the 350. One of the challenges we've been facing is the fact that some people who've even gotten back to work are still getting the 350, and it is a problem for us, but it's a question of us, as I said earlier, on fixing our system so that such people who are still in the system when they are not supposed to be in the system. The challenge we have, obviously, all the time, it's always about the checks and balances from an information point of view, the data that we have, and the system that we use to make sure that we don't pay people who are not supposed to be paid. But also to indicate to the meeting, we have to be responsible, because the Auditor General also is sitting on our case about people who get the money who are not supposed to get the money. And it's our responsibility to make sure that people get the money. The last that I wanted to also deal with is this a very disturbing issue of the teenage pregnancies. And I know that in the presentation, it was an issue of we need to be coordinated as government, but also we need to make sure that we mobilize our communities, because these teenage pregnancies and the children that we are talking about, they live within our communities. Some of the families are actually not coming out straight to say a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, and the work that has been done by the department in its own program going throughout the country. I'm hoping that it's not a once-off thing, it's something that we can carry, because it is really a violation of the rights of a child and the rights of a young girl if a girl gets pregnant at 10, at 12, at 14. It's something that we need to work hard together to make sure that we end it. And the plea here, because this platform is also a public platform, it's also about the men and the behavioral change. And the men themselves appreciating that it cannot be that it's not a 10-year-old that makes a 10-year-old girl pregnant. It is some adult who is supposed to be protecting that child, and they're not doing that. So to both the mothers and the fathers and the uncles and the young men and the older men, it's their responsibility to take this up. We will connect to the Department of Health and the Department of Women and Youth and People with Disability to make sure that, just like we fight hard against gender-based violence, we need to pick this one up, because I think the abuse on young girls getting pregnant has been going on for too long. It's time, exactly the same way that we're rising against gender-based violence, the same way we need to rise and stop this, because it is just unacceptable. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. With that words, members of the Minister, we also need to reassure the country regarding the 350 grant that they must please apply, and as it was indicated, it is on a platform that they can use even on the telephone to apply. Minister, thank you for that wise words on teenage pregnancies. I think it really takes all of us, including the families, to make sure that we fight against the teenage pregnancies, and also that the morality issues on this starts with the family. But we are very grateful for the work that the department is doing into bringing the teenage pregnancy high rate down throughout the country. Members, staff members, the department and the minister, thank you very much for taking this select committee meeting of this morning very seriously. And I want to wish everybody well, and especially the minister, the deputy minister, and the department, because I think you need our well wishes in dealing with all these disasters that we are faced within the country. And with that few words, I want to declare this meeting closed, and as the NCLP, we will go into our NCLP sitting now, and later on we will have our joint meeting. And I also want to salute our president of the country for taking this disaster in KZN and in the Eastern Cape so seriously that he was one of the first people who was on the ground in KZN. And also for the opportunity that we will have in this joint sitting tomorrow to really bring some sort of relief to the people of KZN. As the Premier of KZN has indicated, it will be billions of rand to rebuild KZN to the former glory. And that we also, as members, must take part in the humanitarian relief that KZN is really in need for. I want to say to all the provinces who lend a helping hand in KZN, and also for our members in the select committee who also, although we can't be there physically, but we are also doing our part to make sure that, although it's just some water that we have sent down to KZN, I really want to thank you, and to the country and to the nation. Thank you for showing that South Africa really cares. And with that few words, I want to close this meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to all the members and the colleagues.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Colleagues, just a quick one.
You can continue the quick one. I don't know what it is. But the meeting has closed. Thank you. The meeting has been officially closed. Let's move to our next meetings. Thank you very much. Enjoy the day.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Chair. Bye.